time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Oh, my goodness. Touchdown!
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to another week of overtime. It's a short week. The 4th of July holiday in right in front of us. Also Friday off this week, Monday through Wednesday. So much to get to. The NBA is absolutely blowing up right now. Free agency is underway. Paul George has a new home. Several other players on the move. James Harden staying put. So much to get to as we crank it open on this Monday edition of Overtime. I'm your host, Burt Ramin. Thanks so much, as always, for being with us right here on ESPN Sioux Falls. Wimbledon is also underway. Madison Keys of the United States working on putting the finishing touches on a first-round win. A lot to get to in the sports world. Fun time of year. Some would say quiet. Not so quiet now as we're up in the off-season of the NBA and the first day of free agency. An awful lot to get to, including the biggest move thus far revolving around Paul George to the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll break that down in due time. Coming up in hour number one, John Bonas, the Twins geek of TwinsDaily.com, will join us to talk about the Minnesota Twins. They're still six games back of the first place Cleveland Guardians in the AL Central after the weekend. Where does he project this team being at the end of the month? Does it have enough steam to potentially challenge for the top spot in the division? It's been close at times. Cleveland busted it back open to 6, 7, 8 games. Now right about 6 games. The separation between the top spot and second spot in the AL Central standings. We'll talk all things National Football League. Pretty quiet lately. We'll talk overvalued, undervalued teams. Jordan Love about to get a massive payday from the Green Bay Packers and more with one of our favorites. Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report will join us at the end of hour number one. Hour number two, headlines, highlights. Always on a Monday, your sports history lesson with On This Day in Sports History. We will rewind the NHL draft. That didn't get a lot of coverage later on Friday in the show because it hadn't really happened yet. So we'll break down Macklin Celebrini, number one overall, who the Blackhawks got at number two, and also who the Minnesota Wild landed via trade up on the draft over the weekend for the National Hockey League. Also, we'll send you packing with the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's been more bad and more ugly lately than good for the Chicago Cubs, and that continued yesterday. The Milwaukee Brewers are digging the long ball, and specifically digging the long ball with the bases loaded lately.
1-0 pitch. Fly ball to deep right. Are you kidding me? Another grand slam! 7-1 Brewers on the fifth grand slam in the last 8 days.
5 grand slams in the last 8 days. You heard it there for the Brew Crew. They are 50-34, 7-1 winners at home against the cross-border rival Chicago Cubs. WTMJ with the audio there. Elsewhere, intriguing final. Kansas City is just good enough to hang around with Cleveland and Minnesota. The Royals boost their record to 47-39 with a home win. Bobby Witt Jr., a big part of yesterday's victory.
And the 3-1. And he swings and hits it down the left field line over the leaping third baseman Tatum. In to score comes Blanco. Bobby's going to fly around second. He's going for three. The throw from the left fielder Kwan is offline, and it's an RBI triple.
Kansas City wins it yesterday on their home diamond, 6-2 the final. New record for Cleveland with the loss, 52-30. That audio courtesy of KCSP. Other finals, a bottom feeder battle, a bottom feeder bout between the Rockies and the White Sox. This series went left and right in every which direction over the weekend. Colorado, though, in 14 innings yesterday, finds a way to win on the road 5-4. New record for the Rockies, 28 and 55. Four games better than the White Sox, 24 and 62. Other finals, St. Louis over Cincinnati, 2-0. And Detroit, also on the winning side yesterday. They almost surrendered a big lead that they built. This was putting them up 7-0 earlier in the ballgame.
2-1. Swinging a high fly ball right center field. Moniak going back, looking up. Gone! Carson Kelly, opposite field. 2-out, 3-run home run.
WXYT there. Detroit hangs on to a 7-6 victory. They led 7-0 after that home run. 38-46, the new record for the Tigers. And you can't leave out those Minnesota Twins. They're now 10 games better than 500. 47-37, 5-3 road win over Seattle. Here's one of the biggest plays yesterday.
This ball hit high in the air. Right center field, Rodriguez chasing in front of the J-Rod squad, and it's gone. A home run for Trevor Larnach. And the Twins lead the game 5-3 with a franchise record homer in 19 consecutive games.
Great stuff lately. A lot of pop off the bat for those Minnesota Twins. Cole Sands gets his third win of the season. Johan Duran, his 12th save. Treasure Island Baseball Network with the audio. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, just three games across the entirety of the league. Astros at Blue Jays get going just after 2:05. Mets at Nationals 5:45. Watch that on ESPN+. Brewers at Rockies, a 7:40 start time this evening. Latest American League standings today on your Monday. Orioles still the top team for now in the AL East, although theoretically tied. A little bit better winning percentage than the Yankees. 53-31 for Baltimore, 54-32 for New York. They're followed in the standings by Boston, Tampa Bay, and the Blue Jays. AL West standings at Seattle's division still, 47-39. They're 3.5 games better than the suddenly surging Houston Astros. Houston is 42-41, followed out west by the Rangers, Angels, and the Athletics. And your latest standings for the AL Central: Guardians, the top team, 52-30, followed by Minnesota at 47-37. That is 6 games back. 7 games back are the Royals. 15 games back are the Tigers, and the Chicago White Sox, 24-62 in the cellar, 30 games behind the division leading Guardians. Now for the WNBA. Yesterday, Atlanta lost to the Liberty, 81-75. New York is now 16-3. Big game for Angel Reese in Chicago, but they come up on the losing end against visiting Minnesota. The Lynx win at 70-62. Minnesota now 14-4, and things continue to work in the right direction for Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. Very tough start, very slow start. They're starting to figure things out. Caitlin Clark, almost the first rookie triple-double in WNBA history yesterday. 15 points, 9 rebounds, and 12 assists as Indiana beats up on Phoenix on the road, 88-82. Fever are now 8-12 on the season. And tonight in the WNBA, Sun at Mercury, 9 o'clock, Wings at Storm, same time. That latter game you can watch on NBA TV. Over the weekend of the NASCAR World, Joey Logano wins at Nashville. Overtime prolonged race there, beating up Zane Smith for second place. Tyler Reddick was third. Next up, the race is at Chicago. Road course race Sunday, 3:30 broadcast on NBC. PGA Tour golf, a lot of storylines heading into the final day at the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. Cam Davis finds a way to win it at 18 under par. Four-way tie for second place at 17 under. And amateur Luke Clanton was one of the big stories over the weekend. Finishes tied for 10th in the overall tournament with a 14 under par. Didn't save his best for last, but a tremendous story. Had his parents on the broadcast yesterday. Congratulations. Heck of a weekend. Heck of a round for amateur Luke Clanton. 14 under par at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Next up in the PGA Tour golf world, the John Deere Classic from TPC Deer Run out in Silvis, Illinois. And now to the NBA news we've all been waiting for. The Philadelphia 76ers have made the most news thus far in the free agency cycle. They re-up with Tyrese Maxey, and they do land Paul George in town. Tim Bontemps says this is a big move for Philly.
If these three guys are healthy in the playoffs, they have as high a ceiling as any team in the league besides Boston. I think they're the second best team in the East if these guys are healthy. Because, again, you're talking about, like, in a series against the Knicks, they got three of the four best players on the court. Like, they have supreme high-end talent. It's going to be a question of whether they're healthy, what they can put around them. But the Sixers, for a year, have been preparing to sign a big player. They got the single best player available in Paul George, and he's a perfect fit with their team. So it's hard to say they could have done any better. And it gives them the best chance to win that they've had at least since 2019 with Joel Embiid.
So Tim Bontemps of ESPN, big fan of the move. Chris Canty says, not so fast. This doesn't make Philly that much better.
Do I think this makes them markedly better in the Eastern Conference? No. I don't think this puts them on par with the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't think this puts them right there with the New York Knicks. I don't think this puts them there with the Boston Celtics. I have them as the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference. And guess what? Last year when Joel Embiid was healthy, they were around the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference. So congratulations, Daryl Morey. You made the move to save your job to assuage and appease Joel Embiid in the short term. But I don't think this does anything in terms of making the Philadelphia 76ers a real title contender.
So mixed reviews so far, to say the least, on Paul George landing with the Sixers. Again, they re-up with Tyrese Maxey on a big deal. We'll get you all the financials and all the other moves that have been made today in the NBA very shortly. Also check in, because there's likely, and quite frankly, will be more moves to break down within the next hour of NBA free agency. Every time you refresh the page, something new popping up. One of those moves that's going to come sooner or later is the split for Klay Thompson and the Golden State Warriors. Zach Lowe, NBA writer, had this to say about the end of an era out in the Bay Area.
This is the end of something magical in basketball. Like, this was a dynastic team, and this guy, from the threes in Oklahoma City to the threes against Toronto to coming out with a busted ACL to shoot the free throws to the loudest ovation I heard in that arena ever. This is the end of something, and we need to take a moment to appreciate it. We also need to take a moment to ask, wait a second, hold on here. Same with the Clippers. What's plan B here for this team that has one of the 10 to 12 greatest players of all time still playing at an all-NBA level? They just waived Chris Paul. That salary slot's gone. They might lose an all-time great Warrior, all-time great player for nothing. That player would be gone.
And certainly a lot of changing of the guard going on in the NBA. Free agency latest coming up here in about 10 minutes on the show. That puts the scorecard to bed. But quickly from that scorecard, Wimbledon underway as of today. 12th-seeded Madison Keys, the American, makes her way through the first-round matchup with Martina Trevisan, 6-4, 7-6. The winner there as Keys moves on to the next round. And currently in play, a lot of seeded tennis players right now, including Zheng Qinwen, who is in a battle right now with Lulu Sun, 6-4, 2-6, and down 1-2 in that decisive third set from Wimbledon. Now into your ReliaBank headlines of the day. South Dakota senior J.C. Pulse. We talked about her on Friday on the show. She ended up finishing 20th in the 400-meter hurdles at the U.S. Olympic Trials Saturday evening at Hayward Field. Pulse took 20th in the semifinal round of the 400-meter hurdles, clocking a time of 56.59 seconds. It marks her fifth time crossing the finish line under 57 seconds in the event this spring. Native of Salem, South Dakota, Pulse was a two-time All-American in the 400-meter hurdles for the Coyotes. USD assistant throws coach Maggie Ewan took 6th in the shot put on Saturday, with a mark of 61.25 inches. And continuing with your Olympic hopeful coverage there with current and former USD Coyotes, South Dakota alumni Emily Grove tied for 9th in the women's pole vault to the U.S. Olympic Trials Sunday evening at Hayward Field. Grove was a 6-time All-American for the Yotes and graduated as USD's indoor and outdoor school record holder. And lastly, South Dakota alumni Chris Nilsson made Team USA last weekend in the men's pole vault. He will represent the United States and his alma mater at the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris coming up in August. Well, gear up for an unforgettable evening from Target Field. South Dakota State alumni on Twitter posting that there will be another SDSU night at Target Field Saturday, August 3rd. You can go ahead and circle that on your calendar, Jackrabbit fans. SDSU night ticket package will include your ticket to the game plus an exclusive co-themed SDSU Minnesota Twins jersey. Opportunity to get back out there. Familiar stomping grounds for the football program last year. And you can get out there and support the Jacks. SDSU night at Target Field, Saturday, August 3rd. More details soon to come at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Back from a migraine and being pressured hard by Phoenix's defense, Caitlin Clark still delivered yesterday in a win. The Fever guard finished one rebound shy of what would have been the first triple-double by a WNBA rookie as Indiana beat the Mercury 88-82 yesterday. The game was dubbed the GOAT versus the Rook. Diana Taurasi against, of course, Caitlin Clark, won a 42-year-old legend who has won three WNBA titles and five Olympic golds. The other, a 22-year-old 22-year-old playing for the first time in Phoenix, as is typical for Clark in Indiana this season. Fever supporters made up a decent-sized portion of a sellout crowd of greater than 17,000 yesterday in Phoenix. Clark didn't come to the postgame news conference because she wasn't feeling well, but she did talk briefly to ESPN's Christine Williamson on court after the game, saying, "I'm just happy we won. It was cool to play against Diana Taurasi, and obviously a really great game. This crowd was absolutely incredible." Taurasi's in her 20th WNBA season, and Clark finished her Iowa career early April as the all-time leading scorer in D1 basketball, men's or women's. So yes, a certainly storyline-filled contest. But Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever, early on this season, preseason, were favored to be pretty good. They had Aaliyah Boston. They have the number one pick. Caitlin Clark comes into town. And of course, Vegas and the general public, pretty darn impatient. Slow start. I believe they started out 1-7. They're now 8-12. And pretty cool to see Caitlin Clark and the Fever figuring it out sooner rather than later. Not a whole lot of NHL talk to get to today on the show. We will recap the NHL draft over the weekend here very shortly in hour number two. But Sam Reinhart missed the Florida Panthers championship parade, and he won't miss their attempt to defend the title next year. He scored the game winner in game 7 of the Stanley Cup final, and the Panthers have agreed on an 8-year, $69 million contract with their star, according to multiple reports on Monday. The Associated Press reports the deal got done late last night, which was critical because it kept Reinhart out of unrestricted free agency and allowed the Panthers to give him an 8-year agreement. It also means the Panthers now have forwards Alexander Barkov, Matthew Tkachuk, and Reinhart all under contract together for the next 6 years. So you're thinking of staying power, hopeful staying power for the Florida Panthers, reigning Stanley Cup champions. They ink Reinhart to a long-term deal, and now 6 years together for Tkachuk, Barkov, and Reinhart there in Florida. Star receiver Brandon Ayuk said he wants to stay with the San Francisco 49ers this season despite his current contract stalemate with the team. Moving through your ReliaBank headlines of the day, Ayuk, who is entering the final season of his rookie deal, told TMZ Sports at Los Angeles International Airport on Friday that he's ready to play for the 49ers again, although they have yet to agree on a contract extension. Ayuk told TMZ Sports, "For sure." Ayuk added intrigue to his contract situation with the Niners in a post to his TikTok this month. In the video, Ayuk talking via FaceTime with Washington Commanders rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels, saying, "They said they don't want me back," going on and on, talking about where he would like to play, who he would like to play for. Steelers are on the list. I also saw, of course, the Washington Commanders on the list for Brandon Ayuk, potential landing spots moving forward. Lastly here, finishing up your ReliaBank headlines of the day, another big get for Nebraska Cornhusker football. Former USC defensive back Sierre Wright has committed to transfer to Nebraska. He told ESPN on Friday, Wright started 15 games for the Trojans over the past 2 years and has played in 23 career games, 6 pass breakups and 1 interception. Also has gained notice for his acting career. Wright joins a team that finished in the top 10 in total defense and scoring defense last year under coordinator Tony White, and the Huskers return 7 defensive starters and 10 on offense, which has led to high expectations once again this season in 2024. The team finished 5-7 last year in the first year under head coach Matt Rhule. They limped down the stretch. Let's be honest, it was a disappointing final month of the season for the Huskers. This team is bowling, though, this year. Guaranteed. I'm not going to curse them. I'm knocking on wood for you, Husker fans. But this team is for sure bowling this year, and maybe more. You can set it up to 6, 7, 8 wins for the Huskers. I'm not going double digits just yet, but certainly a lot of star power and a lot of hope down in Lincoln. We take the break and come back with the NBA free agency latest. A lot to break down. The financials for the Paul George deal, the financials for the extension for Tyrese Maxey, and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Overtime rolls along next right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.
Get ESPN with the free app and online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right. right back with you. It's hour number one on a Monday. Again, rain concerns in our area. Please be careful if you're out and about. Hate to see more rain in our area, but again, stay tuned to the latest at your local weather stations. Now for the NBA, a lot to get to here in terms of free agency signings. The Denver Nuggets have lost a key player on their roster to free agency. I know they were hoping to land a deal and retain the services of KCP. That's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. But he's agreed to a 3-year, $66 million deal with the Orlando Magic. It's an intriguing landing spot for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. The 31-year-old had been a linchpin at both ends for the Denver Nuggets since arriving in Denver 2 years ago, helping the team to their first ever title with his 3-point shooting and ability to guard opposing perimeter stars. In each of his 2 seasons in Denver, Caldwell-Pope, a career 37% 3-point shooter, has eclipsed 40% from deep while also playing in 76 games both seasons. As a defender, KCP allowed a league best 40.6% field goal percentage as the closest defender last season. That's according to ESPN Stats and Info. As for the Magic, the landing spot for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, they exceeded expectations this past season, won 47 games, 13 win improvement from the year prior, and a 25 win jump from 2 years prior, finished fifth in the Eastern Conference, but lost to the Cavaliers in a 7-game opening round playoff series. The Sixers are the show, at least today, in the NBA, inking several of their own to extensions, to new deals, and also going out and grabbing Paul George in free agency. Free agent guard Kelly Oubre Jr. has agreed to a 2-year, $16.3 million deal to stay in Philadelphia. The deal includes a player option on the 2025-2026 season for the Sixers starting two guard. Oubre is a 28-year-old surprise minimum signing by the Sixers last summer, but he turned into a reliable part of Coach Nick Nurse's rotation last year, averaging 15 points and 5 rebounds per game. James Harden has agreed to remain in L.A. with the Clippers, 2-year, $70 million deal, according to ESPN and sources yesterday. The Clippers and Harden wasted little time coming to an agreement as free agent all-star wing Paul George's future with the team remained uncertain at the time. Of course, George ultimately signed a 4-year max deal to join the Sixers early this morning. More on that in a moment. Free agent forward Tobias Harris has agreed to a 2-year, $52 million deal to join the Detroit Pistons. That's again according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. Harris, who turns 32 mid-July, had been with the Sixers since the trade deadline in 2019 when he arrived in a deal with the Clippers. It was already the fourth time he'd been traded mid-season since he entered the league. Tobias Harris now, 2 years, $52 million with the new-look Detroit Pistons. Free agent center Isaiah Hartenstein has also agreed to a new deal, 3-year, $87 million deal, joining the Oklahoma City Thunder. He leaves the Knicks for the top West seed, eager to add his size, skill, and physicality. Hartenstein, initially a depth piece earlier this season with the Knicks, but grew into a role after the injury to Mitchell Robinson, became a key part of a magical season for New York, who won 50 games as well as a playoff series for the second straight season for the first time since 2000, averaged 7 points, 8 rebounds, and played in 75 games. Isaiah Hartenstein secures the bag, $87 million on a 3-year deal with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now for one of those guys that's a little bit long in the tooth and is looking to prolong his career with a contender and a soon-to-be contender, very intriguing landing spot today for free agent point guard Chris Paul. Signed a 1-year deal worth more than $11 million to join the San Antonio Spurs. According to Woj, the Spurs and Paul wasted no time in negotiating a deal just hours after the Golden State Warriors informed the veteran point guard that they were letting him go the day his $30 million salary was set to guarantee. The 39-year-old will spend his 20th NBA season down in San Antonio, joining forces with coach Greg Popovich as the Spurs look to build a winning team around their 20-year-old star, Victor Wembanyama. After a loss to the Warriors on March 11th, Popovich had nothing but praise for Chris Paul, one of the best all-time competitors in our league. He's a great leader, great competitor. It's always fun to see him. Last season with the Warriors, Paul, 12-time All-Star, was in a bench role last year, started only 18 games, but still put up some decent numbers, 9 points, 7 assists per game, averaged 26.4 minutes per contest. Chris Paul, officially a San Antonio Spur as of this morning. Philadelphia 76ers All-Star guard Tyrese Maxey will remain with the Sixers, agreeing in principle on a 5-year, $204 million maximum contract extension. Maxey and his agent, CEO of Clutch Sports Rich Paul and Mark Murray, waited a year on the deal to allow the Sixers to maximize salary cap space and now land on a deal in the wake of Maxey's breakout season at the age of just 23. Maxey is the franchise future face, according to ESPN.com. He averaged 26 points and 6 assists per game for the Sixers a season ago. Also stepped up in the absence, of course, of Joel Embiid for a prolonged injury absence during the season. Tyrese Maxey is the brightest star on the roster in certain facets. Again, Embiid probably the better player right now. You can argue star power, who's up and coming, who's the future face, whatever it might be. It's now a big three out there in Philadelphia with the big news of the day diving in right now. Free agent forward Paul George agreed on a 4-year, $212 million maximum contract with the Sixers. This broke early this morning. George's deal, which sources said includes a player option on the final year, which will be 2027-2028, brings him back to the Eastern Conference to partner with MVP center Joel Embiid and newly re-signed, newly extended All-Star guard Tyrese Maxey in pursuit of upending the NBA champion Boston Celtics. The meeting came on the heels of months of unsuccessful negotiations between George and the Clippers on a deal to stay in his Southern California home. George is a 34-year-old, 9-time All-Star and spent the last 5 seasons with the Clippers, averaged 23 points, 6 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and 2 steals per game during that time. But certainly in the mix there. It's an intriguing move. Is it an earth-shattering move? Is it, whoa, look out for Philadelphia? Certainly is not. It is not that kind of deal to me. But in terms of adding star power, a veteran presence, somebody else, you don't have to rely solely on Embiid if Maxey goes down. Maxey, if Embiid goes down, you now got a big three of sorts. Not too big, not crazy paid, those three. But Philly doing everything they can in their power to compete in that very difficult Eastern Conference of the NBA. That's the latest there. When we come back, we're shifting gears, talking all things Twins baseball. John Bonus, the Twins geek, and TwinsDaily.com joins us next on Overtime.
Workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday edition of Overtime. Minnesota Twins are off today, as is the majority of Major League Baseball. 3 total games across the day, including the earliest one getting going, 2:05. Astros at the Blue Jays. Twins gear up for a series against Detroit Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the 4th of July. Joining us now on the ESPN hotline, self-proclaimed Twins geek, Gleeman and Geek Show, TwinsDaily.com, our friend John Bonus. John, great to have you as always on the show. How you been?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, it's been fun to watch some baseball these days. Fun team to watch.
It has been fun. And all of a sudden, all these offensive concerns that we had maybe 2 times ago when we talked to you, slow start, sluggish, this team can really swing the bat, and it's a lot of different players doing it also.
Yeah, this is a really, really deep lineup right now. One of the statistics that we geeks like is something called OPS plus, where 100 is average and it just measures sort of on base plus slugging percentage. It's a good stat for, like, you know, how often are they getting on base and how many, you know, extra bases are they taking? Anyway, of the Twins lineup right now, there's only one person who is below 100 that's average in OPS plus. That's Max Kepler. He's at 99.
Wow.
Everybody else in the lineup is anywhere from, you know, 110 to 150 for Carlos Correa. And Royce Lewis is, you know, 178. That means he's 78% better than the average hitter right now. I mean, it is. And now, you know, with Trevor Larnach playing some left field, we've seen him out there in left field, I think, 5 of the last 7 times they faced a right-hander. They've got Miranda at DH, Larnach at left. It's a crowded lineup. It's amazing the kind of success that they're having. And they're going to need it because Detroit's coming to town and they're about to throw some of their best pitchers at the Twins.
And we'll wait and see. Of course, this division pretty darn competitive right now. Kansas City right at the heels of Minnesota for that second, third spot. And then, of course, everyone chasing the top-ranked, current top team, the Cleveland Guardians. Digging the long ball, though, Twins 19 straight games with a homer as we're continuing our talk with the Twins geek, John Bonas here, twinsdaily.com. When it comes to the offensive issues, I think we can say, at least for now, those are behind the team. We talked about the nerdy stats there that are supporting that claim, but what still needs work with Minnesota to inspire more confidence for you covering this team?
Well, I mean, the bullpen is seeming increasingly thin. You know, Duran has not been Duran. Jax has been fantastic, but a lot of the other guys that they thought were going to be sort of the setup guys have been injured or ineffective. Thielbar has gone from being, you know, one of the top three guys in the bullpen to somebody that they're just trying to find a place to get some work in at this point without hurting the team. Brock Stewart is on the IL, and I think he's at the point where he's starting to throw off a mound, but you know, he's still probably several weeks away at least, and you never really know with somebody with his injury history if he's going to be coming back. Justin Topa hasn't really even thrown a pitch for these guys, and that's created some opportunities. We've seen Jorge Alcala step into sort of a seventh inning role right now. He's been doing pretty good. Cole Sands has looked very good earlier in the year, a little shakier recently. Cody Funderburk came in, had a big inning yesterday in the eighth inning to kind of do some things. So it's not that they don't have a lot of, they don't have guys. It's just that they don't have a lot of high leverage guys that they really trust. And, you know, for the last month, they've had basically an off day almost every week. That can help give your bullpen some rest. But at some point, you know, they're going to come on a 2 week stretch here where, you just look at the bullpen, you're like, everybody's a little overworked with the way they use them because they've had so many close games. So they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do in the bullpen. Either get some guys healthy or make some moves at the trade deadline or, you know, maybe convert some of the guys that have been successful in AAA to relief roles like they did with Louis Varland last year.
John, I wanted to ask you about the youngsters on the team because, of course, coming into the year, it was Carlos Correa, it was Byron Buxton, the usual suspects. But now you get Royce Lewis, who battled that prolonged injury, but he is a known commodity now as a really great baseball player, great young baseball player. But when it comes to kind of the past 5, 10, 15 years of the Twins and having those moments where you're like, man, we've got a loaded farm system right now, all these names out there, what kind of a difference does it make, though, to have these names kind of prospering? And how inspired are you personally by kind of the youngsters on the roster, both that have made it to the bigs recently, the Festas of the world, and those other guys that are still cutting their teeth in the minors?
Yeah, I mean, what we've learned about prospects is, you know, they don't immediately take off the way Royce Lewis has, right? We came into this year thinking we were going to see Edouard Julien be one of the key cornerstones of this offense. We thought we were going to see Alex Kirilloff maybe kind of finally break through. We had big hopes for Matt Wallner. None of those guys are on the roster right now. But instead, what has happened is that we've had a couple guys who last year looked like they were disappointing, and we weren't sure if they were going to have a major career step up. We expected Jose Miranda to have an enormous 2023. He had a miserable 2023. And now he's got an 850 OPS. He's absolutely – he's basically an everyday player kind of swapping back and forth between DH and third base with Royce Lewis to give Royce some time away from out of the field. And then you've got Trevor Larnach, who hit a big home run last night and has been, you know, and now is playing regularly in left field. And he has been everything that we hoped Wallner and or Kirilloff would be. You know, so that's the way it works with prospects, right? If you have five of them, you can hope that two or three of them can kind of come through and develop. And once they do, once they've kind of shown themselves, well, then maybe the other two or three that didn't right away can bounce back. I still got very high hopes for Julien and Wallner and Kirilloff. So, you know, maybe they'll play a bigger role towards the second half of the season or 2025.
Certainly a lot to look forward to in the farm system, paying dividends right now for Minnesota. Again, it was the debut just last week of David Festa, gets the win. Obviously not in ideal performance, but certainly anytime you have your first call up to the show and you're in a win as a starting pitcher, pretty big deal there, for the Minnesota Twins. AL Central, we talked Cleveland before the season and you were saying, I'm not so sure. Are you sure that they're a team capable of winning the AL Central now, John?
Well, I'm sure they are certainly capable of it. They're still six games in front of the Twins. They're, what, on a 110-win pace or something crazy like that right now.
Yep.
They've proven me wrong. I can't quite believe. Well, I don't think any baseball team is 52-30. I don't think they're that good.
Yeah.
But are they certainly capable? I mean, even right now, even if they played 500 ball right now, all the way through, they'd be a 92-win team by the end of the season. Jeez. And that's a hard team to catch. The Twins do have 8 games left against them this year. I'd feel a lot more excited about that if they weren't 0-5 against Cleveland so far this year. Cleveland has just proven itself to be a very good team and a team that continues to roll. They've gotten into a tough part of their schedule right now. They have still continued to roll for the most part. Struggled a little bit this weekend versus Kansas City. But, the Twins are going to have to do well versus Cleveland, and they're going to have to just keep playing really good baseball like we saw them do on this road trip to, kind of narrow the gap slowly and get Cleveland back within reach. And then hopefully, Cleveland at some point this year stumbles a little bit and then gives the Twins a real shot at catching them in the division.
It's been a very intriguing division throughout the season thus far. AL Central right now in the hands of the Guardians, 6 games better than the Twins, 7 games better than third place Kansas City. John Bonus, the Twins Geek, twinsdaily.com, Gleeman and Geek Show. Staying busy these days. Again, twinsdaily.com. John, before we let you go, though, 4th of July coming up on Thursday, I need your power rankings for grillable items. What's your go-to? Give me second, third, maybe a sneaky pick. And also, what's your favorite 4th of July side? I'm going to sneak in here, and it might not be the most popular. Watermelon, so underrated around this time of year. Give me watermelon as an elite side for 4th of July. What do you think?
I like watermelon. I like watermelon a lot. I am a potato salad guy.
Ooh.
I love myself some potato salad. I think there's so many different ways you can go with that. If I see potato salad on your menu, I will always ask the waiter, waitress, the server, what do you think of the potato salad? And then regardless of what they say, I'll try it. And then I will rate it and I will judge you.
Okay.
I will judge you on your potato salad. That is going to happen. As far as grillable items go, I'm a big steak guy. Everybody's a big steak guy.
Yep.
I've kind of gotten more into the smash burger rather than just the regular burger on the grill. I'm kind of in that way. I take both of those over the hot dogs, although I'm personally a very happy hot dog guy. Polish sausages above hot dogs. So, I'll even throw vegetables on there as a grill item. Ooh. I think that's good. I'll give you one more. I think toasting bread on a grill tastes unbelievable.
So wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm a grill dude.
Hey.
And when we bought our new place, it had to have a gas line so we could have a grill. So,
hey.
Absolutely
great job. I can tell we're very similar food-wise because it's, hey, I like this, but I don't love this, but I'll eat it anyway. It's still great. But anything on the grill, absolutely fantastic. Hot dogs, brats for me are up there, but I'm on board with the smash burgers. I need to try that grilled bread, by the way. Always great food discussion. Better Twins discussion. John Bonus at twinsdaily.com. The Twins Geek, John. Happy 4th. Have a great week. We'll do it again here soon on the show.
Enjoy your Independence Day. Enjoy baseball. Bye-bye.
Oh, we can't wait for it. Minnesota Twins playing pretty darn well. Right now, though, that AL Central division, I always like to look at the macro of things because day-to-day, Major League Baseball, this time of year, it's kind of hard to pick apart and say, things are going great, things are so bad. But you look day-to-day at the macro things at the last 10 games or so, the AL Central is a dead heat. Cleveland's won 6 of their last 10. Minnesota, same deal. Kansas City, 5 of their last 10. And then Detroit and Chicago, 4-6 in their last 10 games. The big difference, though, statistically, without diving into the nerdy stats around the Twins and the Guardians, the big difference is the defense. Guardians have allowed 309 runs. That is 54 fewer than the Minnesota Twins thus far this season. So maybe not the offense. That Minnesota Twins offense is back and better than ever right now. But the big issue between the two teams, the difference between the two teams right now as we sit here at the start of July, is the defense. Runs allowed this year between the Guardians and the Twins, 54-run difference in favor of Cleveland. We take the break. Back to talk NFL. Brent Sobleski, the Bleacher Report, next.
You want more of Overtime? It's all on the podcast. Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right. right back with you, set to round out the first hour of the week. Stay tuned. Opportunities to win big throughout the shortened week of overtime right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. We shift gears from talking Minnesota Twins to talking broad strokes National Football League. One of our favorites from the Bleacher Report, Brent Sobleski, joins us now on the ESPN hotline. Brent, happy 4th of July week, my friend. How you been?
I'm doing well, Bert. Thank you for having me as always. Now, I must admit, I'm coming off a week of vacation, so I've unplugged a little bit. But my morning started with my two dogs attacking a skunk in the middle of the night.
Oh,
so
boy.
It kind of stinks around this area.
Hey, well, I will tell you this. At least you don't have to complain about, and I would assume that you would tell me if this was the case. My parents had that similar situation happen, except my parents' dog got sprayed and came right back running into the house, stunk up the whole house, gigantic mess. I assume that you avoided that outcome.
Well, it was sort of. They came in directly because we have a doggy door on the back, but it woke us, the pungence woke us up directly out of bed. Ugh. And then my wife immediately threw them into the bathtub and used some of those home remedies to kind of take the stink out of the fur. But like I said, it kind of stinks, but hey, you just keep moving along.
Keep on trucking. That's the motto of NFL fans everywhere. They're waiting for this boring, and I put that in quotations, time of the year to pass. I wanted to get your take, though. One of the storylines that is persevering through this is that of Brandon Ayuk. Of course, he had the TikTok talking to his friend, the quarterback of the Commanders right now. And then we had all the other kind of drama unfold. Does he want to be in San Francisco? Do the Niners want him? I think that answer is yes, but both parties want the right amount of money. What's the latest you're hearing on Ayuk, and what is the overall kind of forecast for this situation from your end?
But and I think you hit the nail on the head, and it's not just money. I think the key term here is compensation, right?
Yeah.
And it's not just necessarily the contracts themselves, but also what would be garnered in return for San Francisco. There had been earlier overtures by the Washington Commanders, but nothing to the amount where San Francisco would be fully interested in making a deal. And that's quite understandable. Ayuk's one of the best playmakers in the NFL. He has developed into San Francisco's top weapon in their passing offense. So I think it comes down to San Francisco's preparing for the moment where they don't have either Ayuk or Samuel. Obviously, they went out and drafted Ricky Pearsall in this year's first round, right? So you have weapons there, but at the same time, you're not going to try to allow the player to out-leverage you and move him simply because he wants to. So to me, only thing that gets done there is based on someone offering San Francisco one of those Godfather-type deals they can't resist, because right now teams are kind of pecking away at it, but nowhere near what San Francisco wants in return.
Certainly is an intriguing scenario. The other kind of headline carrying the stories these days in the NFL is that of Dak Prescott, Tua, and Jordan Love. When it comes to the latter there, Jordan Love, what is the overall expectation here? Because as a Packer fan, I don't really care what they pay him. Everybody's going to be shock and awe, sticker shock, and say they paid him for one season. Not about last year. It's about what he's projected to do. I'll hammer the table on that day in and day out here on the show. What is reasonable, though, for Jordan Love? Is he top three, top five? Is he top one money as he gets a new deal this offseason?
Well, I think the important thing to really understand with both these situations and how they come full picture is when you have, there's a tenant that runs, especially through your analytics driven type of NFL organizations, and one of the guardrails that they use is identify and pay early. That's an exact quote, right? And the reason that you do so is because you need to get ahead and not behind of the market, specifically at quarterback. And this is where Dallas has failed consistently. If you remember the last time with Dak Prescott, they waited till the very end of his deal to eventually give him what ended up becoming a far more lucrative deal than they did so earlier when the negotiations began. They're once again placing themselves in that same exact position, which is very poor negotiating tactics by an NFL franchise. And Dallas has been one of the worst in recent years by paying out top-of-the-market deals and then not being able to work around those deals like many other franchises do when it comes to salary cap manipulation. So that's where I think Dallas stands and why I think they're far worse off than Green Bay, because one of these things is if you feel you have the guy, you pay now. You don't continue to wait and to get more evidence to basically prove the theory and what you believe that player can become. Because once you do so, you're further down in the pecking order and paying more because that's how the quarterback position works, right? Now, I'm not saying Jordan Love deserves to be making more annually than Joe Burrow, as an example, who's currently the highest paid, technically, not counting Patrick Mahomes, which is because of the length of the deal and the overall contractual value. I don't think he's in that level, but yes, he's going to be among the top five easily when it comes to being paid because that's how the market works for the quarterback position. It's sticker shock at first, but if you do so early, that sticker shock wears off with each subsequent year because the next quarterback's going to get paid more, and then the next quarterback's going to be paid more, and then the next quarterback's going to be paid more. So that means you got a better deal because you weren't trying to extend this out and you got the deal done early.
Certainly a lot to look forward to. Packers and Jordan Love reportedly will have the deal done by the start of training camp. That is coming up later on this month. BleacherReport.com. Brent Zableski on the show with us right now. Recent articles up there. Non-first round receivers who could erupt as rookies. Also ranking the eight best NFL draft classes over the last 10 years. Great work as always at the Bleacher Report, BleacherReport.com. Brent, nobody's talking about the AFC West because everybody assumes, and rightfully so, that the Chiefs are going to win it. But give me the team that's going to finish second in that division and why this year.
You know, it's funny. I was sitting down today, as a matter of fact, as I said, coming on vacation. One of the articles that I'm working on currently is teams that could improved dramatically after addressing specific units that were weaknesses the year before, right? And so you have really what you see in the Denver Broncos is what I find fascinating here. And I'm not going to say, again, they're going to knock off Kansas City, as you rightly stated. In Las Vegas, they have their issues as well. The Chargers didn't make as many moves as we expected, specifically at wide receiver, although Ladd McConkey is getting rave reviews coming out of everything through rookie and minicamps. But the reason Denver's interesting to me is based off what could potentially happen with Bo Nix.
Yep.
Bo Nix was the sixth quarterback drafted in a record-setting first round, right? First time we've ever seen six quarterbacks drafted in the top 12 picks. First time that they were that many coming off the board. And so I find it fascinating that he could be the last yet provide the most instant impact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I look at it as in his upside isn't anywhere near what we're discussing with some of the guys that were taken earlier in draft, like Caleb Williams and Drake May and so on and so forth. But he's 24 years old. He's been at two different programs. He's been in multiple systems. He's the son of a high school coach. He's a guy that also played college football. He has more starting experience than any college quarterback in history of that level. So if he can step in and orchestrate Sean Payton's offense, and I'm not saying that he needs to be all-world, all-pro, Pro Bowl, any of those things. Just orchestrate the offense based on how it's devised by Sean Payton and get the ball out quickly, efficiently, and accurately within rhythm. That team could be difficult because they do have talent elsewhere. They were just held back for multiple different reasons the last 2 years, whether it was coaching 2 years ago and how that all crumbled, or game manipulation, or Sean Payton not being on the same page with Russell Wilson last year, or so on and so forth. I think this team can come together and at least be competitive compared to what we've seen in recent years.
I love the answer there. And again, the Broncos finally beat the Chiefs last year, regular season contested late October. First time Denver had beaten Kansas City since 2015. So maybe it's a turning of the tide. By the way, lastly, Brent, top free agents out there. I think the list starts and ends with Justin Simmons. Before the draft, I was hoping the Packers would ink that dude. He's still out there. Are there any predictions there as to Simmons' landing spot? Could he end up back in Denver? What do you think?
I don't have a specific prediction, but the one team I would keep a close eye on, simply because of their situation, they do still have money left. Indianapolis Colts made me start sniffing around secondary options here later in the process. Once you get past July 1st, and it has to be a certain amount guaranteed on a veteran's contract. So what I find interesting about the Colts is this is a team considered on the up and up, right? You're getting Anthony Richardson back. They didn't add a safety during the draft. They didn't add a cornerback during the draft, at least not high in the process to go with what was essentially the youngest secondary in the NFL last year. They played well, all things considered, but still, you might get that top-of-the-line starter that can really improve. So that would be a team specifically that I would look at that still needs help that is in the right place potentially and has the money to make that type of deal.
All right, that's the latest and greatest from the National Football League. Justin Simmons, perhaps a future Indianapolis Colt. Great stuff as always. Brent Sobleski, the Bleacher Report. Check out the work, bleacherreport.com. Brent, until next time, I wish you all many happy returns, no more skunk encounters, and all the best to you and yours. Happy 4th, my friend.
You enjoy the holiday as well, and everyone listening. Thank you very much.
All right, BleacherReport.com. Brent Sobleski, our guest there. Wide-ranging update on all things in the National Football League. Again, not just about the dollars, but the total compensation for Aiyuk and the Niners. Jordan Love will be part of a market reset at the quarterback position. Like it or not, believe it or not, it's going to happen one way or another. Jordan Love, top five, top three money, maybe top one money in certain metrics, guarantees, length, total value, something like that. And again, little sticker shock on the way, absolutely, but you're not paying for what a player has done. You're paying for what you think they can be, and the Packers think they've got a good one to lead their team into the future. We take the break, top of the hour on a Monday. Still some fireworks to give away today on the show. Stay tuned. More of Overtime next, right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.